And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and today we'll be talking about the Lac-Mégantic lessons. We've just had some events in Quebec and across the country and around the world that people were concerned about. There's a tie-in here between the issue of what happened in Lac-Mégantic and rail safety, but also this strange phenomenon called fracking, which has led to a whole change in our language. People are now telling each other to go frack themselves and that kind of stuff. So you can tell that we kind of change. And so we're going to be talking about that. We have, of course, Phil Connan is here. How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
And Phil is a walking authority on the railroads, and he knows a few fracking facts, too, about both rail and what happened, where it starts in the Dakotas. And we've had some elections which we want to have a connection here. Quebec they've established a moratorium on fracking, and that was a government position which I understand might be under review. So we're going to be in about 15 minutes we'll be talking to Robin Philpott, who is a publisher, but also, of course, follows the Lac-Mégantic issue, what has been the fallout a year later. Incidentally, there was a demonstration there yesterday. The new, a premier of Quebec was not too happy to see demonstrators, but this is going to happen because actually there's a scar in the middle of the city town, and people want to know, okay, so where's the money? Who's going to rebuild this? So we'll be talking about that, and also about the publishing business. People might know this. Stephen Colbert has started joined a war with Amazon to try to save the book publishing. And so we'll be going into those matters. I better say right now, we want to congratulate Eugenie Bouchard, who was in the finals at Wimbledon, the first Canadian woman finalist in that great tournament. And I would like to point out that she's now, it's clear that Eugenie Bouchard is what they call a top-tier tennis player. She's in the circle of five or six names that could win at any moment any of the big tournaments, which is hard. It's very hard to reach that level. We often say, well, so-and-so is doing well, and we really hope, blah, blah. But there are those who have achieved a skill level and the necessary mental toughness, as it's called, to actually complete the process, and Bouchard obviously has that. I remember the beginnings of the run by Venus Williams, who didn't win her first couple of times, but once she hit that level, you knew it was going to happen. The same with her sister Serena. So Canadians should really get behind Bouchard, take heart from this. It reminds me of Lennox Lewis, the heavyweight champion, who, by the way, never when people talk about champions, his name doesn't tend to come up. That's because of his home address. He's not London, and he's not New York. And so there's a prejudice that works against anybody who's not from the major centers. It's because it's a business, after all. But I did hear him explain once his situation, and he said they asked him about a guy who seemed to be talented. He said he's not in the top tier. He's good, but he's not in the top tier. And he didn't mean to insult the person. He'd be just pointing out their skill levels. Long way around, I said it. Eugenie Bouchard, terrific. It's going to be fun to watch. She's 22 years old, I think. I confess I went to the horse race, to the Queen's Plate, and a filly won.
Queen's Plate?
Went to the Queen's
Did
Plate.
Did you see the Queen?
The Queen wasn't there. No, her representative was, and we all stood up. And the horse stood up, and the crowd stood up. And it was fun. I went just to kind of watch everything. And horse players remind me of any casino I've ever been in. They're sad looking people. They're always very sober, people who you think, if they would get up and walk away from their tout sheet or whatever it is, would become really kind of interesting personalities, but they have this deeply worried look, and you say to yourself, I guess it's this month's rent is going into that. It's maybe on the line. But it was great race. That I think this horse had, the favorite horse was, we remember Archie, I think it was, or we forget Archie. I changed it to forget after he lost, but I think it was we remember Archie and Arthur. I'll get there.
Arthur.
It was Arthur. And
but you didn't bet the rent on him, I hope.
I didn't, no, not a penny. No, I have wounded pennies. People know about that. And so, I didn't bet. But it was, he finished out of the money. But he had run well against California Chrome in a couple of races. I understand that this is the beginning of the Canadian Triple Crown, so we will see. There's others to come up, but I don't know if people should appreciate just the beauty of a great horse. The part that is fun is to go to watch the horses being brought in, and if I was a horse player, I would spend a lot of time looking at them, because you know, after all, you're playing hunches, even the guys who have all the science, but. Just seeing how they what their mood is that day. You know, if you see a ball player who looks like he's forgotten where his luggage is, you'd say he's going to have a bad afternoon. If you see a horse that seems to be out of it, you sort of have an idea. Anyhow, I do recommend. I have some news I want to share with the listeners. An important labor leader has died, and labor leader, in my opinion, he's been a guest on our show. His name is Dave Feikert. And Dave Feikert was an associate of Arthur Scargill in the greatest miner struggle in modern history. The opponent was Margaret Thatcher, and it was ugly, great battle. Feikert had been there for some time and was one of the key individuals in providing assistance and guidance and. He wrote an article for the Guardian newspaper just a few years ago to remember that strike. Phil, you must remember the,
of course,
the battle between.
Well, Margaret Thatcher said.
By the way, there was Arthur. We remember Arthur. That was Arthur Scargill. And it was the backdrop to that was a political struggle going on in the world. Margaret Thatcher was crushing the coal miners. As she set out to do. I mean, I think one of the things people have to understand about who she was, she understood that the New World Order was beginning, and you did not have to do any favors for unions at all, not a one. Feikert, in a Guardian article, his name is Dave Feikert, please look at him, his article, and remembering, he said, people don't understand that it was from the people we were negotiating with, there was no negotiation. They had a little list of things we were going to do, and that was it. And so the question was, you want to bleed to death, or shall we shoot you in the head? It was pretty much your options that they were offering. And I want to remind people that there was another labor leader with whom Margaret Thatcher had a Valentine love affair, and his name was Lech Walesa. And she couldn't say enough things about how much she loved Solidarność and Mr. Walesa. And it was mutual. He attacked Arthur Scargill. A very important detail. And of course, he endorsed Ronald Reagan when Ronald Reagan ran for president. And yet there were people in the Canadian streets saying, oh, there's a labor leader. There's the man. You want to get behind him. And when Margaret Thatcher died, Lech Walesa attended her funeral. Just like, you know, I'm sure there were howls the way little dogs howl. And the most recent headline I read in association with that great labor leader, who, of course, immediately left Solidarność and which made a career for himself, on the record, his vote the last time he ran for president was something like 1%. They couldn't get it under zero, but it was headed that direction. But the last headline he made was that he advocated that Poland join Germany. He thought that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yes, that's his latest innovation. And there probably a few euros.
Well, that'll keep him at under 1%.
a few euros in that idea. But meanwhile, Scargill was vilified and hounded. So here's a man, Dave Feichert, who was devoted to not just the union and the wages and communities, and incidentally, those communities were destroyed. He did all this great effort, intellectual and physical. He, by the way, he was a great presence. Phil, you might remember him.
Of course I remember.
He was a New Zealander, and he had a wonderful temperament that no matter how hot or angry or upset people were, he was always smiling, level-headed. And meanwhile, though, quite a physical presence.
He lived a few years here.
He lived here, and we could talk about it.
He certainly touched everybody who he worked with.
Anybody who met him he's the kind of guy who walks on the shop floor, and you say, okay, let's make him president, because you know that he likes everybody there. He's not in it for the money. And he was very intelligent, capable, and physically, though. He had been a rugby player and an athlete. I saw him trying to learn baseball, and he was having trouble, but he kept knocking it over the fence because he said, well, I know cricket, whack. He said, now, if he could only learn to run and catch the ball.
Right, well, I have one memory of him describing a job he had in a meatpacking plant and giving a very graphic description of what it's like to disembowel a cow in an industrial setting. And I thought, boy, that was... That was quite an image, and but he said, "Well, that's what people in that place do. I mean, they do it all day long." And he, it was very matter of fact about it.
Yeah. Well, he later, by the way, returned to New Zealand, and he became a consultant for mine safety. That's how the occasion we happened to be interviewing him was. It he wrote on the issue of mine safety, and he was an advisor to the Chinese government. Because China has had a lot of problems with mine accidents and they wanted to reduce them. And he provided that and to such an extent and increased their and improved their safety records, he was given awards for it. And so that you really have to appreciate a guy that has done so many things. He fought for the mine workers in Britain, and then he worked on safety with the Chinese mine workers. We'll come back to that a little later. I think we're joined now by Robin Philpott. Are you there, Robin?
Yes, I am, Phil.
We're just talking about this Dave Feichert, who passed away. And he had been with the, you must have heard, with the mine workers and all that. And, now, safety is a big subject anywhere people work, and that I want to start with you on the issue. And incidentally, this is Robin Philpott, publisher of Baraka Books, but is a writer in his own right, and also has contributed on issues of labor issues, of course, in Quebec and elsewhere. And this big issue that's alarmed Canada 1 year ago this month was this accident at Lac Megantic. And so now a year has gone by. I understand there was a demonstration yesterday when the new premier went there. What are the issues faced by the people of Lac Megantic?
Well, probably the biggest issue is what are they going to do with the train tracks? Are the train tracks going to go around the town, or are they going to continue to go right through the heart of it? Mm-hmm. And the people were demonstrating yesterday. I'm not sure how many, but their complaint is that people are not prepared to make a decision to go around the town, and they say we should have learned. So we should learn, and because I'm sure that in the federal government and the Quebec government, they don't want to create a precedent, because every one of these towns and cities has these trains going right through the center, and you have accidents occurring, none of them of that are serious. So that's one point. The other point is that there's a lot of hesitation, slow moving, about what to do about the heart of the town. And, of course, the heart of the town, it just has been gutted, like as if it's been hit by bombs. And that's just a reminder to everybody, the people, the loved ones that they've lost. So those are the two major complaints.
Well, What are they? Is that line? It's not a. There's no line at present going through Megantic, right?
Well, there are trains that are going through it. Apparently, they've got temporary lines, and so there are.
What about the famous cargo? I mean, you know, the number of oil shipments is fantastic. I just give you a number from today's Toronto Star. In 2009, the number of carloads of crude oil shipped in Canada 2009 was 144.
Wow.
And 2013, it's 127,925.
Carloads.
Carloads.
Wow. And they're going through our towns and cities?
And if it's coming from that famous place in North Dakota,
yeah,
it has a new label on there. I don't know if they are labeling it, but we found out a little something about that the oil from that region. I think the theory is that it was being fracked and that the chemicals put in it made it volatile.
Yeah.
I assume that's a consensus. But so are the carloads going through Megantic at the moment?
Well,
are they the same old carload?
I can't answer that. Whether those kind of material, what I understood is that there's no oil going through there. But mm-hmm. There's other kinds of, because they wanted, the trains also shipped out products and brought in products, so that that mm-hmm. had nothing to do with oil, so mm-hmm. that they got that back up. But I can't tell you. Mm-hmm. Can't tell you whether there's oil going through there. I would be surprised. I would be surprised, but because the people are very sensitive to that now, understandably. So
I think that on the issue of fracking itself, I understand that Quebec has a moratorium.
Yeah.
Who introduced that, and what's the status of that moratorium?
Around the time of the major student strikes, there was also a kind of an uprising against fracking, against the shale gas fracking, and in the St. Lawrence Valley, and there were large numbers of people living in rural areas and small towns just southeast of Montreal who mobilized, and they joined in with the students, and it was against the Liberal Party, and the PQ was in the opposition at the time, said we will put a moratorium on fracking. And so it was one of the first things they did when they were elected in
as far as I know, that's
September 2012.
I think that's the only provincial or state government in North America that did that, right?
Yeah, I think it's the only one who did the only jurisdiction where that was applied, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Liberals came back into power, as everybody knows, in April, and they've been saying, well, no, we're going to open up the economy for hydrocarbon and research and so on. So that the word is that they are thinking very seriously of lifting the moratorium. So it hasn't been lifted as far as yet, but they're hinting that that's the way they're going, because they're going to reinstitute exploration and possible exploitation of oil in Anticosti Island, and they say everything is possible, but they haven't lifted the moratorium yet. But there is, so it still applies.
Mm-hmm. By the way, that's a province, Quebec, where they watch all these things very closely.
There's an added debate in Quebec. Is Quebec has, as you know, great hydro resources, and people here in all walks, in all areas, are saying we should not go the way of petroleum products. We should go for electrification of transportation, so that we have a combining economic and ecological opposition to the orientations of the current Canadian government, and I'm not sure whether the Liberals and NDPs are going that way, but where everything is on oil and the tar sands in northern Alberta. So they're working desperately to find ways to export that, those tar sands. Mm-hmm. And in Quebec, there is this opposition that is both ecological and economical. In other words, they say, if we electrify, we will encourage a diversification of Quebec's economy. We will not be dependent on oil. And so that's the debate is very strong here. And so the opposition to the proposed pipeline, the Trans-Canada pipeline, which would bring the oil from the tar sands through to Kakuna, which is just east of Quebec City, and they want to build a big deep sea port there to export it to Europe. There's a tremendous opposition here in Quebec to it, there is elsewhere in Canada.
Sounds to me like the Liberal Party is in for a ride.
Yeah. Yeah,
they've got power, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, the Liberal Party is sort of ambivalent a bit about it, but they are tending towards, of course, they want to get along well with Harper, and Harper is trying to muscle this through.
Mm-hmm.
I should remind what Jane Jacobs said about that tar sands project. He said, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. She said this in 2005. I said, the law of diminishing returns means that it's just not going to work, and people anyway, she was very opposed to it. She thought it was just one of these crazy schemes, natural resources schemes. So.
Well, by the way, I was just reading Hans Blumenfeld, who lived here in Toronto and was her friend, colleague, and they had their differences occasionally, but he argued for electrification.
Yeah.
Particularly transport. He said, stay away from the fossil fuel.
Yeah, and we also here in Quebec, we do have this hydro resources, which, I mean, they have in Manitoba. They don't really have in Ontario, but they do have. We do have here in Quebec, and it does mean, it means economic and industrial development. It doesn't mean just exporting natural resources, which is very limited in its, in its scope,
Mm-hmm.